Warning: this episode contains some discussion of plane accidents and could be very triggering to people scared of heights or of flying or of being in accidents, such as myself.
The Black Box explains it about Australia's own invention of the skies.
Yeah, what's the chorus say again? I haven't heard listened to that song in so long.
Nor have I. I wrote this down years ago.
Okay, yeah. That song was inspired. There was a three or four part series called Black Box, or The Black Box, which is about airline disasters, narrated by a guy called Sean Barrett, who is the best. Like, I still search for him on Audible for reading when I like him to read audiobooks. He's just got a brilliant voice. So there's this period where we'd be touring a lot, and every night before we'd get to the airport, I would have watched an episode of The Black Box, and each one focusing on a different airline disaster. Like, they did the big KLM jumbo disaster in Tenerife. So yeah, and I'd be relaying, as we're getting on the plane, I'd be relaying, you know, the story of the last episode of The Black Box that I'd watched, and what happened in that airline disaster. So that's what that song's based around.
As you're about to board a plane for Brisbane.
Yeah, yeah.
Welcome back to Foves Are the Best People. I'm your host, John, and we have returning guest, Joel Palmer. Hello, Joel.
Hello, John. Hello, everyone.
Joel, do we pronounce it in the Australian way? We sort of mumble Palmer, or do we say Palmer like the Americans do? Is the L silent or not?
It is pretty silent, yeah. Or
Palmer.
Almost more like an R. And get a lot of chicken parma kind of jokes.
Is that what it's down in Tasmania called? I think Queensland, they say parmy, in WA too, I think.
Yeah, it's 50-50 really between a parmy and a parma. But yeah, a lot of people that are pretty passionate one way or the other.
I'm not passionate, but I'm pretty sure it's mostly parma in Victoria. But people are gaslighting me and saying, no, it's the other way around, or it depends. I don't really care, but I think it's parma in Victoria. Anyway, let's not get parochial. What song are we reviewing this morning, Joel?
We've got a B-side called Black Box.
Joel, what do you think of this song?
I don't mind this one at all, John. It's one I wasn't overly familiar with, so it has been a homework song for me. But it's a fun little coxie number.
This song came out as a B-side on Give Up Your Day Job, I think. Just checking that now. It did not make it on to Prefer Others. Yeah, is it on Day Job?
Correct. Yeah. Yep. This is along with another coxie one called Podium Finish.
Ah. Yeah, it didn't make Prefer Others because I guess at the time that came out, it was just 4 or 5 years old and they preferred unearthing some of the older B-sides. Yeah, I was not overly familiar with this song. I downloaded it from the website in 2004 or whatever and occasionally listened to it. But listening to it now, this is a bit of a gem. It's a bit of a fun... The adjective I got, Joel, was bouncy. I call it like a bouncy electro-pop song, although it's basically a rock song, but it's got a bit of bleeping and keyboards in it. I don't know, where do you want to start? First impressions, maybe, of this song, Joel?
Yeah, I agree about the bouncy comment, and especially for it's quite a dark kind of theme going throughout it, but done in very light ways. And I know there's been some songs Western people have mentioned around Coxie's vocal delivery sometimes doesn't always go that full energy, but this one, I feel the chorus is 100% Coxie in full enthusiasm mode.
Yeah, no, I agree. He's giving it his all and he has to reach for a few notes. Ba, na, na, na. Yeah, he sings it like he means it.
There's been quite a bit said, hasn't there, around this time with Thousand Yard Stare, and Coxie was like really, really into that change of direction with that more electronic. So I feel like he was really buying into these songs and had a real belief in them.
Yeah. We'll have a clip of when we interviewed him all those years ago about this song. I seem to remember him saying he really was obsessed with disaster docs, like airplane crash disaster documentaries, which you still get on TV when I occasionally turn on free-to-air TV on Channel 7, Gem or whatever. They've got like, you know, unearthing the history of the crash. And I think he was really quite taken by some of them. So he certainly had an interest in the topic matter, apparently.
Has it come up in interviews around him being a nervous flyer?
I'll have to listen to that clip again. I think so. Which, you know, since 2000, when they do the small tours that they do every 4 or 5 years, it's obviously they're not getting in the Tarago these days if it's outside of Victoria. So the times where they do play now, interstate, will always be with planes. So I hope he's got over it.
Yeah. It did remind me too, just around a bit of a theme in some of the songwriting choices around, you know, a sad tale of a workplace, a failed workplace incident.
Yeah. Yeah, you could consider this in his workplace suite of songs, Phasing You In, or because it's talking about the stewardesses and things.
The explorers who didn't find anything that, you know, things just didn't quite go to plan that day, and that comes through a bit on this one for me.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, the name in the bark, the Burke and Wills thing, that's what the Black Box is. It's a record of failure and tragedy, of course. Stuff you should know. A flight recorder is an electronic recording device placed in an aircraft for the purpose of facilitating the investigation of aviation accidents and incidents. The device may be referred to colloquially as a black box, an outdated name which has become a misnomer because they are required to be painted bright orange to aid in their recovery after accidents. There are two types of black boxes: the flight data recorder, FDR, that preserves the recent history of the flight by recording dozens of parameters collected several times per second, while the cockpit voice recorder, CVR, preserves the recent history of the sounds in the cockpit, including the conversation of the pilots. In 1953, while working at the Aeronautical Research Laboratories, Australian research scientist Dave Warren published a report entitled A Device for Assisting Investigation into Aircraft Accidents. Aviation authorities from around the world were largely uninterested at first, but this changed in 1958 when Robert Hardingham, the secretary of the British Air Registration Board, visited the ARL and was introduced to David Warren. In 1960, after the crash of Trans-Australian Airlines Flight 538 at Mackay, Queensland, Australia became the first country in the world to make cockpit voice recording compulsory. In 1965, the units were redesigned in and relocated at the rear of aircraft to increase the probability of successful data retrieval after a crash. In 1967, the US required all turbine and piston aircraft with four or more engines to have a black box fitted. Flight recorders are specified to withstand an impact of 3,400G. This is roughly equivalent to an impact velocity of 500 kilometers per hour, and to resist temperatures of over 1,000 degrees Celsius. Flight recorders are contained in fire-resistant and shockproof cases made of stainless steel or titanium with high-temperature insulation inside. Modern FDRs are accompanied by an underwater locator beacon that emits an ultrasonic ping to aid in detection when submerged. These beacons operate for up to 30 days and are able to operate while immersed to a depth of 6,000 meters. In 2010, David Warren died, age 85, in Melbourne. He was buried in a casket bearing the label, "Flight Recorder Inventor, Do Not Open," a play on the "Flight Recorder, Do Not Open" label on his very recorders. From 2014, the disappearance of Malaysian Airlines Flight 370 demonstrated the limits of the contemporary flight recorder technology, namely how physical possession of the flight recorder device is necessary to help investigate the cause of an incident. Technology commentators called for flight recorders to be supplemented or replaced by a system that provides live streaming of data from the aircraft to the ground whilst in flight. Commentators have also called for extending the battery life of the underwater locator beacons, and there has been some suggestion of ejectable recorders. Most recently, in the Alaska Airlines Flight 1282 accident, the cockpit voice recorder functioned properly, but the data was overwritten as the CVR remained powered and functioning. The critical accident data was overwritten by over 2 hours of post-incident sounds until a maintenance crew could enter the aircraft after the incident and power down the CVR. In stand-up comedy, many jokes have been made asking why the entire airplane is not made out of the material used to make black boxes, given that the black box survives the crash. The original joke is credited to George Carlin. Where do you want to start first, lyrics or music, Joel? Take your pick.
Yeah, the lyrics would be good, John.
All right. Well, the verse. Gin and tonics. I thought that might be auto-tuned, so I listened to it over and over, but I don't think it is. I think it's embedded into the song lyrics. He couldn't think of anything better to write, so he just repeated Gin three times. Do you think it's a... Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? It grabs your ear at the start. Like, is the CD skipping or what's happening? Gin.
Yeah, it's really, really catchy. Coxie singing about gin and tonics. It was only a few episodes ago I listened to the podcast and just I didn't realise that fact around Coxie, you know, not really even trying drinking till he was, you know, quite later in life. And with so many songs that kind of name check drinking and things like that, that was quite a surprise to me.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's also a vegetarian and, yeah, he just never developed a taste for alcohol.
But puts himself into that persona of others drinking around him and, brings it into some really good lyrics.
Yes, he's the observer. He's the detached, sober recorder and, you know, he remembers more of the band's history perhaps than, well, Doug does too. It was really helpful to get them all in the same room together because they bounce off and it's a great way to recall history when we did our interview with all of them. But yeah, he's the sober one, apart from, of course, the occasional wine, red wine that he drinks with food occasionally. Yeah. I'm sort of sympathetic. I'm basically a teetotaler, not through ethics or anything. I just have a couple of beers every year, but I've never been a big drinker. At this time, we're coming to the end of the Jack years, so if Jack was the big drinker and the party boy, I guess, who's always had his vodka and things, and Ted's about to come on board and he drinks a lot of beer. But yeah. So yeah, gin and tonics. Maybe, you know, he's written that purposefully because he's pretending he's like a tape loop in the black box, you know, recording the information. Maybe I'm reading too much there. The flight crew all got washboard stomachs. This is a link. In the early 90s, they had a demo, a song called Washboard Gut. And obviously we'll return to six minute abs in the future. So Coxie's always talking about the aesthetics of people's... physique.
Yeah, that was my note on that one. And straight away, I thought of 6 minute abs and that kind of fascination. And yeah, no, he's a pretty fit man, Cox, isn't he?
He is, yeah. And then the next line, I'm sure you've written something down here, chiseled jaw.
Yep, not a weak chin.
Yeah, got it. Someone cross-check the door, hydraulic oil, hot food under foil. Does that remind you of another song, Foil?
No, that one didn't stick out to me.
Surf City Limits, all covered in oil, aluminium foil.
Of course. Of course. Oh, that's Fives 101. How did I miss that?
That's okay. That's why we're doing the pod. So he's already set up like flying of yesteryear. Like this is 1950s stuff where people talk about, you know, you dress up to fly, you wear your best suit, you know, your Jackie Onassis pillbox hat, you're dressing up to go on a flight, whereas now it's all, you know, we're all humans, basic bogans going to Bali with thongs on, you know, but then you used to have gin and everyone was fit and it was like a rich person's transport. Next verse, the tech staff worrying. Is that what it says?
Yeah, that's what I got.
Yep. The captain, the bursar, the football results and the holidays in surfers, an ocean of smiles, trolleys in the aisles, yeah.
Yeah, the football results and the holiday in surfers, very Australiana.
And the word bursar, it's so old-fashioned, and I only ever think of that word in relation to, you know, the footy club treasurer or something. It's such an old-fashioned word.
Yeah, so just trying to get something to rhyme a bit with surfers, bursar, where Coxie was going with that.
But yeah, have you ever heard the word bursar in relation to anything else except like, you know, the old, the football team, like, yeah, so it works out well that it's a football team.
Yeah, putting your hand up as a volunteer to be the local football club, the bursar, that's part of being a secretary.
Trolleys and aisles. Have you ever had your leg hit by a trolley?
No, I haven't. I'm usually get the middle seat.
When we interviewed Doug, he said in the 90s and stuff, when they tour with the Gurge, because he's got N, he's often seated next to Quine Yeomans of the Gurgitator, N and Y. And I wonder where Coxie sits. I like to think they all sit next to each other in a row. But if they're on a 747, who knows? So then it's the great chorus. The bad weather, pilot had mental fatigue. The black box explains it. Yeah, great image, huh?
Yeah, yep. Remember hearing a lot about the black box and finding out what that was with, some of the aviation disasters of the last 20 years, 30 years.
And he sings the words really close together where you think, hang on, what's he saying? Oh, bad weather. And then, comma, pilot had mental fatigue, the reasons why planes often, hopefully don't fall out of the sky. But bad weather pilot. No, it's not a bad weather pilot. It's bad weather and the pilot had mental fatigue, but he sort of sings it quite fast to fit it all in. Then there's a verse break, then verse. Music and movies, they don't allow silence. Japanese mountains, Canary Islands. I'm assuming Canary Islands and Japanese mountains are where there's been a big crash, a famous crash. I haven't looked that up. Wealthy flight, we don't want to die. God, it is dark, Joel. But hey, we all got to go sometime.
It's dark, but it's you wouldn't know it if you were just going along with the music.
Yeah. And he's mentioned wealthy flight. So I know comedians joke, if you want to be remembered, make sure you're flying next to someone famous because they don't ever go down, I want to be sitting next to Leo DiCaprio or on the same plane as Elon Musk or something,
Almost like a disbelief that this could possibly be happening on a wealthy flight. This is meant for, the budget airlines.
Exactly. Then the chorus and then the bridge. Which I don't really get. Well, a year ago, I wrote that note stashed in a fireproof envelope if you're in South Australia. So it's obviously comparing a black box to a safe or something, but what note? Is Coxie leaving a confession for someone to find with all his demos in it or something?
Yeah, it is a bit of a random one, that line.
Searching through the flame and the wreckage they go. Lucky, 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 I know. What did Coxie put in that black box? So that's the lyrics. Anything that sticks out to you or makes you laugh?
Oh, I really, really like that one about the kind of setting the scene with the tech staff worrying and the captain and the bursar, the football results and the holiday and in surface. That was a real standout for me.
Has it made you recontemplate getting on a plane? Like, oh, good. I wasn't afraid of flying, but now.
Yeah, I always get a little bit nervous once a bit of turbulence hits and things like that. I've had a few of those from Melbourne to Hobart in the last few years.
Oh. Yeah, I think as I've gotten older, I've actually gotten a bit more scared. I've made quite a few trips over the years to Colombia, so going over that stretch of the Pacific. I know it's silly, but I get comforted by the fact that at least we're flying over ground, but flying over water, it's just for like 12 hours, I just get so effing scared. And the turbulence now, I always want to sit on the wing because it seems to be not as bad, but yeah, I'm a nervous... I'm going to put a trigger warning at the start of this episode, actually.
It's a very unlucky not to have made Prefer Others, I think they saw.
They could have got rid of You're the Voice or something, or Rain. But I guess it was just too fresh for them. It just felt like an offcut of something that came out just a few years ago, I guess.
Yeah, my other main note around the music, as we move on to the music's the keyboard and the programming, and it just seems like Coxie was having a lot of fun with that. At this time, it was like a new instrument, a new toy that he was spending a lot of time with and getting good results from.
Yeah. So it starts off the intro. It's like little bleeps, like the computer's doing a little burp. But it's nice. It's a bit of colour. Bit of colour to the song.
And it does match well with that stuttering gin and tonic.
Yes.
So it might have been crafted that way, cleverly.
Yeah. Definitely a possibility, I think. Later on, we, not you and I, someone else will be lumped with doing Aim to Please, the B-side off Good Times Coming. And that's got a lot of phase guitar and keyboards that I don't remember liking. But here it's just, it's tasteful keys, you know? It doesn't overwhelm you. Yeah.
Agree. Yep, very tasteful.
Okay, so I worked out, got the guitar here. I think it's pretty much in the key of E. And I think it works best drop D tuning. And it's sort of three finger chords, like, you know, 7-7-7 E. All three fingers. So E and then D is just three open strings down the bottom. E, D. So you're diving a full octave down. E, D, E, D. Gin and tonic and modern avionics. Da, 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 da. 7-7-0-0-0, 7-7-0-0. And then it goes to 9. For a B, pretty much. Chisel, jaws, and then down to A, I think it is, on 7. And then G, which is just 5-5. Two fingers, not three. The chorus is then just bad weather pilot, da 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 da. So 5-5 open, open, 5-5 open, open, and then just a regular C power chord on the A and D strings. The back box explains it, and there's some backing vocals there. I can't work out if it's Ted or not. Did you have a clue? Is it Coxie backing himself, do you think, Joel?
I thought it was Ted.
Possibly, yeah. I was a bit uncertain. I guess this was recorded at Ted's House of Sound. I'm not sure. Or was it actually at Fortissimo for the album? Not sure.
This was about the time Ted officially became part of the band?
Well, they did a whole lot of demos the 6 months before they went into the studio to do Thousand Yards. So this could have been recorded in the late part of 99 when Jack was still technically there. Jack's last day was New Year's Eve 99. Yeah, we're just recording the 99 episode now, actually. So, yeah, it's got to make sure we're fair and even-handed, and there's a lot to unpack there. But anyway, Backbox explains it. C, D, 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 D. And then the second one, it goes up. The black box. And then black box 7 will explain. And then I haven't quite worked out the bridge bit yet, but I might insert that after. But, yeah, I always like playing in drop D. Yeah, anything else stick out with the music for you? The drums and bass we haven't talked about.
It's more the keyboard standing out for me on this one. Love the jangly and, yeah, upbeat sound and how that kind of takes you away from the darkness of what's happening in the song. Just feel another underrated B-side, and it makes me kind of excited if there's some tropical strength B-sides out there that we might get to hear from soon.
We can only hope, but I think they only recorded 11 songs. I think it was a lightning raid to Bali, but we can only hope. Joel, the next song on this single of Give Up Your Day Job is Podium Finish. Will you join me for the next episode?
I'd love to. Love to, John. Podium Finish is a song I've grown to really like.
Well, many thanks for joining us on the episode of Foves of the Best People. Joel, will we talk about the...
Thanks for having me.
We're taking you back to March the 23rd, 1962, a milestone in aviation safety, when a prototype of the cockpit flight recorder, the black box, was tested in Australia. Scientist David Warren invented it.
They only got one recording from their prototype device, and that was it. But it showed all instrument readings and voice projection over the top. And although it possibly sounds simple in today's electronics, that was an incredibly complex scientific method of separating voice from background noise.
Today, the modern equivalent of the black box is compulsory equipment in passenger airlines around the world.
In a world where aircraft travel is increasing very rapidly, I think it's doubling every 10 years or some figure like that, and the number of people who die in aircraft crashes in absolute numbers is going down, all you can say is that it's saved tens of thousands of lives over these years.
This film is concerned with the causes of fatal accidents in the field of general aviation. There are two primary factors involved: the man and the machine.
The story of the black box began in the early 1950s with David Warren, a chemist who worked at the Australian government's aeronautical research laboratories.
Dad was a fuel scientist expert and was asked to attend a conference or a discussion of why the Comet aeroplane would have crashed in 1953.
Jenny Warren is David Warren's daughter. She remembers her father as a man always brimming with ideas, an instinctive lateral thinker. And she says it was while he was at this conference about Comet Airlines that he found his mind wandering.
At this stage, he was thinking about a tape recorder that he'd seen at the World Trade Fair. And he was fascinated by this thing, and he particularly was interested in it because he had visions of himself taking this tape recorder to a Tommy Dorsey concert, and he would have loved to have sat and taped the Tommy Dorsey concert. So while he was sitting in this conference, he was enjoying his tape recorder thoughts, and he thought, you know, we could have a survivor. If we had a survivor, that would be useful, but you can't get a survivor from a plane crash. But you know, they could talk into that tape recorder and tell me what happened while it was happening, and I wouldn't need a survivor. I just need a tape recorder with the pilot telling me what's happening while the plane's crashing.
After the conference, David Warren went back to the laboratory and wrote a memo proposing an aircraft flight recorder. He then set about developing the idea, determined to see it through. By 1957, a demonstration model had been produced, but the Australian aviation authorities weren't interested, as David Warren himself recalled in an interview.
The answers we got were very disappointing. One answer was, "We do not need your device. In our opinion, it would produce more expletives than explanations." Another one was, "Dr. Warren's invention has no immediate significance in civil aviation."
It always seemed to me an ongoing frustration. All I can really remember is just repeated frustration about the management, why they blocked him, the stifling of it. That was what dominated my memories at the time.
Peter, David Warren's son, says that despite the lack of any official top-level support, his father's immediate colleagues did back him. They helped hide the project while David Warren continued to work on it. Then, in 1958, came an unexpected breakthrough.
Coombs, our director, had a friend of his from England, and I heard Coombs' voice behind me say, "Dave, tell my friend here from England what you're doing." It was only later I found out it was Sir Robert Hardingham. So I simply said, "If you put one of these in the plane and it had an accident, you'd have a record of the 4 hours of what the pilot said and what the cockpit instruments were reading." And I heard this pommy voice say, "I say, Coombs, old chap, that's a damn good idea. Put that young lad on the next courier and we'll show him in London, begad." And I looked up to Coombs, and he had a twinkle in his eye because he could see this was a possible breakthrough at last. And he said, "Righto, Dave, get your passport ready. You heard what the man said."
He was just delighted and excited that somebody wanted to see his machine. And when he got to England, London particularly, and showed it and got such a wonderful reception, he was just over the moon. That was probably the highlight of his life.
David Warren returned to Australia via Canada and the United States, where he also demonstrated his flight recorder. Back home, he worked on a further prototype. On June the 10th, 1960, a civilian plane crashed at Mackay in Queensland, killing all passengers and crew. It was Australia's first major air accident. When an inquiry failed to reach a clear conclusion about the cause of the crash, the judge recommended that flight recorders be installed in all Australian airliners. Yet, even then, it wasn't David Warren's model that the government decided to purchase.
Australia bought an American system which didn't work, rather than David Warren's system. So it really was a lost opportunity, and the Defence Department didn't want to patent it because it was going to cost £2,000. David's development was unique, simple, and easy to understand, much better than the competing systems.
What we understood in the broad sense was that the belief was that we couldn't do anything better than what was coming out of the United Kingdom and out of America. That was a very solid belief that if there was anything worthwhile in the world, the Americans would have discovered it, and we will import from the Americans. There's no way that we could possibly compete with that. And that was a lot of the mentality that David was up against.
As interest in the concept took off around the world, companies in other countries had moved ahead with development, capturing the market. David Warren's system was taken up by a British firm, Devals, and became the red egg because of its shape and colour.
All aircraft vibrate a little. Here the red egg is prepared for the worst by being subjected to merciless vibration through a wide band of frequencies. The official specification states it shall withstand a static crush force of 5,000 pounds applied continuously for a test period of 5 minutes. It would take more than that to crack this egg.
Australia was the first country in the world to make installation of the black box and commercial aircraft mandatory.